Slightly different start to the show than usual. Patrick Keilty has enjoyed a long career in TV, radio and, of course, stand-up comedy, and he's made his name with routines that met the violence and sectarianism of the Troubles head-on. Now, Paddy's father, Jack, was murdered by loyalist paramilitaries in 1988 when he was just 16 years old. Now, 20 years after the Good Friday Agreement, Paddy has returned to the subject with a documentary called My Da, The Peace Deal and Me, which is on tonight, BBC One, at 9 o'clock. As part of the documentary, he reveals that he voted in favour of the Good Friday Agreement and he met with people who didn't, including the DUP's Arlene Foster.
And it was principally about the release of the prisoners, which to me was just an anathema. You know, how can you allow people who have committed some of the most heinous crimes just walk free as if they had done nothing?
The men that killed my dad.
Yeah.
Were let out as part of that agreement.
Yeah.
And I felt it had to be done. I find it difficult that if I'm prepared to suck that up, mm-hmm. that maybe some other people that haven't gone through what I've gone through find it difficult.
That's true for you. But for others, they want justice. Sadly, there are some people who still want retribution. That's why 20 years later, we're talking about the legacy of the Troubles and we're still struggling as to how to deal with it.
Now, Stephen spoke to Patrick from his home in Los Angeles and began by asking him how he feels about revisiting these events of 20 and 30 years ago.
It was an interesting journey for me to go back and to revisit it. And I think whenever you've been living with something for 30 years and your life has moved on, I would be the first person to say, I've had a very lucky life, you know. My family, my career, everything that has come my way, I would class myself as a lucky person. And yet what happened to me and my family and so many other families in Northern Ireland, it's something that I don't really feel, as you can tell, I don't feel comfortable talking about it. I don't feel comfortable bringing it up. But I think that whenever I was approached to do this documentary about 20 years of the Good Friday Agreement and where Northern Ireland was as a society, I think it's important to let people know that you've got skin in the game like so many other people.
Can you bring me back, Patrick, to the day you found out about your dad? Where were you?
I was in school. I was putting up comic relief posters that I hadn't asked for permission for. It was the very first comic relief. I was called down into the headmaster's office. I thought absolutely certain that this is what I was in trouble for. And I walked into the headmaster's office. One of my dad's friends was there. I was told to sit down. And then everything just kind of goes into a sequence of events which you know you're going through, but it doesn't feel real. From the point of him saying, your dad's been shot, I know I said, is he dead? They said, yes, he is. I remember going home. I remember the news report. And one of the interesting things about making this documentary, I had never seen the news report in 30 years. I'd never had any will or want to go back to that. And whenever I got the first viewing copy of this back, and you see yourself, and you see the news report, you see your dad's office, and you see the funeral, and all of these things, and it doesn't really seem real. You know, even with the passing of time, you feel that actually happened. And I think with a lot of people who went through the same thing, it's the numbness that almost gets you through it. And therefore, it's the numbness that makes it difficult to recall the detail of what actually happened.
Were you close to your dad, Patrick?
I was. We were all close to him. He was. He was the chairman of the Gaelic football team in the football club in Dundrum. We all played football. I was at that age where you were. He was not only your dad, but you were mates with him as well. So yeah, we were a close family.
And in the days following that, after the shock of hearing about it, how do you start processing that in your head? Do you want to know why and who?
I don't know, Stephen. I mean, you know, for me, one of the things was you were really, really driven by the fact that you wanted nobody else to want to go through that. You know, the idea of catching the people, the idea of, you know, some of the people that killed my dad, they went on trial, they were put in jail, they were let out as part of the Good Friday Agreement, which I completely agreed with, because I felt if we were to move forward as a society, if we were to move forward and nobody else would go through what our family and thousands of other families went through in Northern Ireland, that was a price that I felt was worth paying. And yet, at the time, I don't think you were processing any of that. You were really just trying to put one foot in front of the other, get through another day, and look after your mum, look after your brothers, and kind of just hold it together.
I've lost my father, and my father died from natural causes, and it hurts. It hurts big time. What is the pain like when it's not through natural causes, when someone's gone out to deliberately take your dad away from you?
That was one of the strange things whenever the film crew brought me back to Dundrum. And my dad's office was opposite the quay, the harbour there. And now this is a new development, and as we both know, Northern Ireland has been completely transformed by 20 years of peace, and it's unrecognisable. It's one of the greatest places in the world to come and visit. And so, you know, I have holiday apartments and places, you know, that are in place of my dad's office. And how it happened and what happened didn't cause me any pain. The stuff that you're talking about your dad, it was me looking over to the side of the water, and that's where my dad's boat used to be, and that's where we used to have our fun. That's where we used to do our water skiing, and that's where the regatta was in Dundrum. In a way, how it happened doesn't, I think, for me, change the pain. It's the memories of the good times that you had. That's where, and I think anybody that's lost anybody through any causes, that's the thing that always gets you.
So you're slightly confusing me in that how it happened. How does that not compound the pain? The fact that loyalist assassins went out and shot your father to death, did that not create a huge amount of anger?
I think for us, it was shock, it was pain first. It was grief. It was the fact that he wasn't there. And I think maybe because we were one of the lucky families in Northern Ireland where people were actually caught, they were charged, there was a trial, we sat through it, we saw justice being served. I think in a weird way that may have taken a lot of that anger away. It's a weird one with the passing of time, because I think so many people, and one of the things that I find discovered going back to make this documentary was that I felt frustrated. I felt frustrated that families like mine, who had gone through pain, we'd signed up to the Good Friday Agreement, we decided that we wanted to have a new society and a new future, and 20 years on, there's not even a government in Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland is thriving in spite of the politicians, not because of them. And I was trying to get to the bottom of, why have we not moved on? And what I found is that for so many people, it's just the pain is still there. So the pace that I wanted people to move at in terms of, you know, it's 30 years since my dad was killed, I want the society to be different for our kids, for the generation that's actually growing up now. And I couldn't really see. My blind spot was, why can't we all put this behind us and move forward? And what I found out was that for so many people, the pain is too much. And the cycle, people talk about the cycle of violence, and I think it's the pain becomes anger. That anger drives people to do things, and suddenly they're caught up in stuff that they didn't even think they would ever do. And so that was one of the things we find as well.
Maybe I can move this on, Patrick, to you helping us understand. You said earlier on that you supported, as part of the Good Friday Agreement, the killers of your father being released. Was that difficult, or were you sure that was the right thing to support?
It was both. You know, the notion of someone who, you know, has killed your father, getting out of jail, that naturally is a knee jerk that probably wouldn't sit well with anyone. And yet I felt and still feel that was the absolute correct decision. Because if you're going to try to build a new and inclusive society, that society doesn't just include people and families like me. It also includes the families and those people that were in jail. And that's...
Don't they deserve to be in jail for the rest of their lives? And isn't it a dangerous message to send out to any society that, you know, if it's politically expedient, killers will be released?
I think this brings us on to a unique set of circumstances in Northern Ireland. And I think it's very prevalent at the moment when you look at stuff like Brexit and how Northern Ireland should be treated in that process. And I lived through extraordinary times, you and me and everyone, you know, growing up in Northern Ireland at that time. To judge what was going on there by the standards of normal society, it wasn't a normal society. And so those rules and the questions and the knee-jerk that sounds absolutely reasonable anywhere else, it wasn't normal. It wasn't normal, so the normal rules just couldn't apply.
Have you forgiven the people who killed your dad?
Well, this is an interesting one, because one of the people that we actually go to see in the documentary, and it's this was we there's a number of people that we went to see on the journey, and I don't want to give too much away, but one of the people that we did, who was injured, maimed in the violence during the conflict, actually went and met the person that did it and forgave them. And whenever I was talking to him, he felt that forgiveness was about coming to terms with something yourself and moving on in your own head. And while I was never, and I'm not, going to shake a hand or give a hug to the people that killed my dad and say, that was okay, I forgive you, I'm absolutely at peace with myself over it. So I'm not sure whether that means forgiveness or not. And in terms of some of the people that we met on this journey, that was the case for them.
So you don't want to look them in the eye?
I don't really have any interest in that. I think if you look at trying to make peace, everybody has a price for peace. But peace is actually about 3 or 4 miles up the road from where the most reasonable person actually can get to. And for me, the price of peace was letting those guys out and trying to build a new society and coming to a peace within myself over that, which I've absolutely done. Can I go the 3 or 4 miles up the road to look him in the eye and shake him in the hand? I don't think I can. But I still don't think the progress that I've made and so many other families have made in order to first of all put that agreement in place and to change Northern Ireland. I think that progress is still okay.
Let's talk about modern-day Northern Ireland. Again, you mentioned this earlier. We don't even have a government in Northern Ireland anymore because the politicians cannot find agreement. Stormont has, the Assembly has fallen, has collapsed. Is it, given the sacrifice people that like you have made and what you've had to put up with, you know, the killers of your father released under the Good Friday Agreement, and here we are all of this time later without even a functioning government in Northern Ireland. How frustrated are you about that, and who do you blame for that?
I think one of the things about 20 years of the Good Friday Agreement is that people actually take the agreement for granted. And if you look at how people think, oh, the Good Friday Agreement, yeah, that just, what well, they sat down at the start of Easter week and by Friday they'd rattle something together and everybody was hugging each other and that was fine. It was torturous negotiations. It was really painful. There were so many times where that process looked like it was going to fall. And I think that once that agreement is signed up to, and what was interesting was going back 20 years later and actually reading the agreement. And I think that one of my frustrations is that if you look at the stuff that the politicians are falling out over in Northern Ireland at the moment, whenever they're left to their own devices, that just shows you how difficult it is to agree. And so the agreement itself has everything in it. And I'm just frustrated that we haven't actually held that document up and lived it out, I think would be the main frustration.
Are you worried about all of this talk post-Brexit of a hard border?
I am. I really feel that one of the pieces of magic of the Good Friday Agreement was that it said to nationalists, actually, you know, there is no border. So while you're in Northern Ireland, and Northern Ireland's part of the UK, I mean, you're kind of in Ireland as well. So you can feel Irish, and that was fine. And I think that for years, that really worked. And I think that whenever people talk about, you know, there's talk now of Brexit and hard borders and the possibility of, you know, a unity referendum and the question of, you know, will there be a referendum for Northern Ireland to reunite or to stay with the rest of the UK. And I really feel that the middle ground is going to decide that referendum if and when it comes. I think it's not going to come tomorrow. It's not going to come maybe even in 10 years' time. But when it does, it's going to be like Brexit. It's not going to be the people that feel really strongly about it on each side that will decide it. It's going to be the middle ground. And I feel that any type of border, be it technological, invisible, the mental aspect of that border coming for a lot of that middle ground nationalist population, I think that means that they'll be more likely to want to join the Republic of Ireland.
So do you think you'll see a united Ireland in your lifetime?
Well, you and I both know how I live my life and how much gin and tonic I like, Stephen. So, I mean, who knows how long I'm going to live? But I feel that before Brexit, I would have said no. And I think there is a chance. But I think that one of the problems for both sides in Northern Ireland is that the Good Friday Agreement was about trusting the other side. It was about trying to make peace with the other side. And now where we are 20 years down the road, I believe it's about trusting their own ideas. And if you're on the unionist side, in order to preserve the union, you're going to have to make Northern Ireland feel a bit more Irish, ironically. That's what you're going to have to do in order to make those moderate nationalists feel happy within Northern Ireland. And conversely, I don't believe that people on the Republican side have any idea how to welcome unionists into what they want as a United Ireland.
That's Paddy Kielty there. His documentary, My Dad, The Peace Deal and Me, it's on tonight, BBC One at 9 o'clock. Interesting, some of the thoughts from Paddy there, his reflection on his own loss and how that changed or didn't change his perception of other people, of what we refer to as the other side. His thoughts on the Good Friday Agreement. If you want to give us your thoughts on what he was saying there, 030 30 80 55 55.